Welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha, a podcast for and about women of color in STEM. These women are brave, beautiful, and brilliant. Their stories deserve and need to be heard. Their voice strong, their message clear, their experiences priceless. Now let's welcome this wonderful winning woman of color to the show.
Hello, and welcome back to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha. Man, let me tell you. So I know I say this probably with every guest, but I can't even tell you how just excited I am for our guest today. She is a Black woman in STEM, of course, but she's also amazing. And I can't wait for you guys to hear her story. So our guest today is Dr. Carlotta Berry. And, oh man. Hi, Carlotta. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm stoked. I am.
That's great.
I am always, it always makes me really happy when I find a minority woman who really wants to tell their story so that we can have this like this colorful tapestry of stories to tell and to help the next generation. So thank you for agreeing to be my guest today.
Oh, no problem. I love to do these things.
All right. So as we do with every single guest on every single show, the first thing we do is ask you to tell us your STEM story.
Okay. So mine is probably a little non-traditional. I think I've always kind of been the nerdy reading kind of girl, but not necessarily the STEM girl. So sometimes you hear, you know, especially boys talk about, oh, I've always been into STEM. I've always been into science. Not me, really. I was more into teaching. I remember being 5 and 6 years old. I loved dolls. And I would set my dolls up in a row and I would teach them and I would give them homework. So I really just wanted to be an educator. The STEM actually came later. So my mom was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. So I come from a long line of teachers. My husband is a teacher. And then probably around middle school, a principal told my mom that I was kind of not living up to my potential and that I should probably be in a magnet school because of my ability to do math and science. So that was probably one of the first times when anyone started looking at me as more than just a kid who liked to read and was kind of quiet and loved dolls. And so once I got in magnet school, that's when I started hearing more about, you know, you're pretty good at math and science. You might want to consider that. I actually just shared the story on Twitter yesterday. Someone said, what is your early STEM memory? And mine was having to do a science fair project in the sixth grade. And me nor my mother had any idea how to do that. So we went and found the nerdy boy son of my mom's friend to be like, so he could help me. And he was like, here, just take this battery and this light bulb and this wire and make a circuit to turn on a light bulb. And the craziest thing about that is now that I'm an electrical engineer and I teach circuits for majors and non-majors, the first thing I do in the very first lecture is talk to them about how you do that. Because there's actually a video on YouTube of MIT graduates in engineering, electrical and mechanical engineering, 4-year degree, who don't know how to take a wire, a battery, and a light bulb and make it turn on. Wow. And it's one of the most basic concepts of electricity, but it's kind of like about, that's how engineering is taught at this theoretical level, so much so that you forget about the practical aspects of it. So then I get to high school. And I'm at a magnet high school, and I was in a program called En-ROADS. En-ROADS is a program for diverse students to get them ready for internships and professional development. And I went to a career counselor, and they said, you're so good at math and science. I know you want to be a school teacher, but, you know, if you become an engineer, it's going to be the difference between driving a Yugo and a Mercedes. I can now tell you that career counselor was lying through their ever-loving teeth. But at 15 or 16 years old, who knows, right? So right. Now I'm dating myself. There was no internet then. There were no cell phones really then. So I took my happy tail to the local library to look up engineer, because to me, I thought an engineer was a train conductor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what an engineer is. So I go to the library And I look it up and I'm like, I guess. But then I was like, I kind of still want to be a teacher. I kind of still want to be a math teacher. So that's why I chose to go to Spelman College. I was always going to go to Spelman, but I majored in math. And then I also did a dual degree program with Georgia Tech in engineering because I wanted to hedge my bets. So that if at any point I'm like, this engineering thing is not working for me, I still had my math degree and I could go on and get an education degree and become a school teacher. Luckily, the engineering thing worked out. I was never meant to be an engineering professor, though. I was good with abandoning the teaching altogether and just being an engineer until I got to engineering school and saw the complete lack of diversity and was like, oh, no, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had to become faculty at some point because we got to do something to change the face of this industry, the face of this academy, because my professors not only were not diverse, but they didn't seem to appreciate my diversity or even me as a student, as an individual, any of that. And I was just like, this is not cool. I know one of the things you had said is you were going to talk about reflecting on your journey. If I think about where I was academically at the time that I decided that I was going to get my doctorate, you would have thought I was delusional and crazy. I don't even want to tell you what my GPA was. So the fact that I actually was able to do it and I made it is a look at God story. But I'm going to stop there and let you ask your next question.
No, I mean, well, first of all, let me say that Spelman is a great college. It just, the work that they do to prepare Black women, minority women, it's unmatched. Uh-huh. And so, full disclosure for my listening audience, I live in Georgia and I'm very close to Spelman College. So,
Oh, good. I did not know that. Awesome.
It's the background college in my story. So it was always the place where, and it's so funny because I had this discussion with my mom because my mom was like, you should go to Spelman. And I was like, I don't want to go be with no Black girls. I grew up with, because I'm a twin. So I was like, I grew up with, I don't need no more, you know? And so she was like, okay, so you're totally missing the point. But ended up at Georgia Tech and had the total opposite experience. And it was like, yeah, I should have listened to my mom.
Don't get me to preaching about Georgia Tech. You know, that's actually what started me on my journey to academia. It was Georgia Tech.
I don't doubt it. I mean, I can tell you, having been there, started there, that the minority students, the Black students on campus, I mean, you almost have to know, you know, everybody. Because there aren't that many of us, but you know everybody. You may not know everyone, but at least you got to do the acknowledgement. When you see another Black person, you have to acknowledge them, because I see you. I know your struggle. I probably have lived part of your story. If not, I'm living it right now. Yeah. There had to be that acknowledgement happening.
Yeah.
So I can totally, totally relate to you. You know, your experience there. I will. So if you can you tell us a little bit more about your experience when you were at Spelman? So that people who maybe they didn't have that experience, they went to a PWI like myself, like what is that experience like going to an HBCU?
Okay. So I can tell you what my motivation was starting from even back in high school. So when I was in high school, they had called all of the Black female students in for a convocation. Mm-hmm. And a young lady who had graduated the year before had gone to Spelman, and she had come back to actually recruit us. And I remember sitting in the auditorium looking at her, and I was so impressed with how well put together she was and just how poised she was. And I was like, man, I want some of that, right? Because, you know, and there's research that shows this too, is that there's a lot of bias in magnet programs. So even though I was at a magnet school, and it was a public school, it wasn't like private or anything, it was still only like maybe 10, 15% Black. And then I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. So there were definitely a lot more Black folks than that. So it was kind of like, do I want to go to an all Black school? And I was like, you know what? After my high school experience, I'm ready. I would tell you something about Nashville is that the city proper is still very much racially divided along lines. Like there's Black parts of the city, there's white parts of the city. So even though I went to a high school that was kind of racially mixed, I still grew up in a neighborhood that was probably 90% Black. So then it became, do I want to go to a school like that? So I had gotten into Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, and Spelman. And when my guidance counselor heard that I wanted to go to Spelman, she was devastated. She was like, no, I want you to go to Vanderbilt. I was like, no, I think I want to go to Spelman. So she even had the Vanderbilt recruiter basically bum rush me one day in the guidance office to try to change my mind.
Wow.
And so I was like, well, you know what? Let me go visit all of them. I'll make my choice. So I did a weekend at Georgia Tech. I did a weekend at Vanderbilt, and I did a weekend at Spelman. The weekend at Georgia Tech, they gave us a tour of the campus and we had a luncheon and somebody did a technical talk. I don't know what they were talking about, but I was thinking about what the heck are you doing talking to a bunch of 18-year-olds about your research? Like, we know what the heck you're talking about. It's like, hello, get a clue. Buy a clue, Alex, right? So I went to Spelman. It was a program called Spellbound. Mm-hmm. We went to a party. We hung out in the dorm. We did each other's hair. It was like a huge slumber party. I grew up with two brothers. I didn't have a sister. I went home and I told my mama, pack my bags. I'm going to Spelman, honey. because at least they understood.
Yes.
What an 18-year-old needed to make a college choice decision. So I arrived on campus and I was in the honors program. So we were in a living and learning program. And at the time, Spelman still had a curfew. So you want to talk about some real mad 18-year-olds having to be in the dorm every night until 10 o'clock, by 10 o'clock. And then weekends was midnight. And then I think second semester weekends were lifted and maybe 2 a.m. during the week. So at the time, we were hot. We were mad. Like, how dare you? But I will tell you now that because of that, having to be in the dorm until 10 o'clock and nobody wanting to go to bed till 3, I knew those women better than anyone in the world, even to this day. I mean, we still talk about, you know, in the middle of the night, you got bored. And so we were making New Edition dance breaks, you know, in the hallway. Yeah. We had a slam book, just like when you're in middle school, we had a slam book. We made a fake sorority and we all pledged it and went up and down the hall with our fake sorority. I mean, you just name it, you know, it was so wonderful. And so everyone got identified by who they were. So like me and my next door neighbor were the math majors and I was the engineering major. So people would bring me their broken electronics. Never mind, I don't know what the heck I was doing, but you know, I get out my little screwdriver and try to do something. But just that whole drinking the Kool-Aid of you're a Black woman, hear you roar, you can do anything you want. And so to this day, you know, there's Facebook groups with Spelman alumni. You can go on that page and the whole page is nothing but doctors, lawyers, attorneys, physicians, pediatricians, anything you want is somebody in that community, in that network who has it. There was never this whole, you can't be what you say you want to be, which is why me with my 2.x GPA at Georgia Tech saying, I hate it here and this sucks, I'm going to become an engineering professor, was not completely delusional, despite how things looked, because of what Spelman had instilled in me. I think if I had gone to Georgia Tech as a freshman instead of going to Spelman first, I probably would not have graduated from Georgia Tech, because something in that 3.5 years at Spelman gave me the fortitude to be able to stand against some of what I had to deal with when I got to Georgia Tech. Because at Spelman, you know, you don't go to class in rollers. You don't come down and meet a male visitor in the lobby of the dorm in your pajamas. They had all these rules about what a lady does. You know, if at graduation, you better have on natural hose, a white dress and black shoes, or they're going to pull you out of line. And at the time, you're like, I'm grown. They don't tell me what to do. But all these years later, that sense of discipline is still in you. And I give it to my students, even though I teach at a PWI. I will check them on some of that same stuff right now. And they, oh, Dr. Barry. And then the next day, they'll be like, you know, you like our mama. I ain't really your mama, but I'll tell you some stuff.
You know, but you there know. Is something, there is really something to it because, so I will say this, having been at Georgia Tech,
and actually didn't graduate from there. I transferred out the end of my sophomore year, and ended up at a smaller college where I was able to thrive and grow, mm-hmm. because they did have the personal touch, which is what I needed all along.
Absolutely.
It's too hard, and I shouldn't say it's too hard, because it's not that it's too hard. It's just, it's really hard to thrive in a environment that's not made for you. There are few mechanisms that are in place that are set aside to help support you.
Absolutely.
And so that's the thing. And so I really admire you for sort of using that experience to help gain clarity about what it is you want it to do and where you want it to go next. So you wanting to become an engineering professor is like, I think that's brilliant. It's like, so, because of course it's one of those things where it's like, well, I want to be a part of the solution, and this is one way for me to do it, you know?
Right. I think some of it was naivete. excuse me as well, because at 19, 20 years old, you don't know all of the challenges. You don't know all the issues. You don't know that part of the reason why there are so few Black people in the STEM Academy is not always a pipeline. It's also an environment. Mm-hmm. There's a welcoming issue. There's a lot of implicit bias. There's a lot of invisible labor. There's a lot of things that make people turn away and go, you know what, bump this. I can go to industry and make a lot of money and not have to deal with this drama. And so I like to tell people, if you're getting your PhD and you're Black and people are saying, you should go teach, we really need you to teach, I tell them, teaching is my spiritual gift. Mm-hmm. So if it's not yours, you do more harm than good by going to teach because somebody's begging you to do it because we need more Black people to do it. Because it does take a love for that art for you to do something when you know you're one of a few and you are going to deal with a lot of disrespect from, in particular, majority white male students, people questioning your credentials and if you're qualified and if mm-hmm. you should be there. But the reason I can stand and I can handle and deal with that, because I know that God placed me here and this is what I'm meant to do. I've actually taught at a HBCU and a PWI. I know my mission in life is to get as many Black engineers out there into the world as possible. So I'm willing to stay through some of that BS because of that. I was going to tell you one more Spelman story, though.
Sure.
is because I was in a living and learning program. If you went to class and your roommate was not there, the professor would stop and ask you where they were. And if they weren't there, they'd say, go get them up and get them in class and get them out of the bed. Those were the kind of things that when I got to Georgia Tech that I missed. Because the first time I walked into a 200-person lecture hall, I think it was a physics class at Georgia Tech, I was really like, what is this? They don't even know I'm back here. And, you know, right. And so it was interesting though, because when I first got to Georgia Tech, the Black students who were Georgia Tech students from freshman year on, they were not very warm to the AU students. There was this stigma that we thought we were better than them. And so I remember when I first got to Georgia Tech, I wasn't getting very good grades and I was really struggling. And I'm reading the book. I'm working two or three jobs because I'm also broke. But I was like, why am I not doing well? Because at Spelman, if you're reading a book and you study with your friends, you pass. One day, I happened to go over to the library. And I don't know what made me do it, but I was like, maybe I'll go study in the library. I walk in the library. My entire class is seated around a table with all these stacks of papers, Word, old mm-hmm. exams, all the old stuff this professor had probably published since birth. And me, the fool over here, I've been using the book and notes to study for tests, and they've been using Word. Nobody yeah. had bothered to tell me that there was any such thing as Word. There was no Word at Spelman. At Spelman, you study, you pass. And they were not too warm about me walking over to the table like, what is that? Can I sit down? Like, you know, they kind of, yeah, I guess, whatever. Once I got a hold of that Word, my grades shut up exponentially. And so now all of a sudden I'm getting pretty good grades because now I know the secret sauce.
Yes.
So now all of a sudden, not only are the Black students asking to study with me, but I had the African students, the Arab students, the Asian student. So one of the things I tell my students now, especially my Black students, I'm the Nesby advisor at my school. I tell them, mm-hmm. you study with who studies with you. You make your community who wants to be in a community with you. I don't care. If the Black students are struggling, you go find who you can study with that will help you, and you bring it back to your community. Because that's what I learned, is that I can't wait for you to welcome me. I got to go find people who will. I got to get the resources and the tools that I need, because it's by any means necessary. That's ethical, of course.
Right. I totally agree with that. And well, I agree with both, actually. Knowing the importance of word, how it saved my behind on many occasion when I was at Tech. Totally understand that. And I can, unfortunately, agree with the assessment that there was, though, you know, probably unnecessary, there was this stigma, and not even a stigma, there was this thought that the students coming from Morehouse and Spelman, who were in a part of the dual degree program with Georgia Tech, did think that they were better than us that started at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. And so that is or was, unfortunately, the thought. I didn't really recognize that, you know, or at least in my experience while I was there, that you guys were being treated differently in that way. I know, having been in the midst of conversations where that was the topic, that was a real thought.
Yeah. I will say that by the time I graduated, though, we were all friends. It's sad, though, because I don't really know where they are now. But by the time I graduated, Black students who came from the AU and the ones who started at Georgia Tech, I was friends with both. And right. I was equally as close to both. And I studied with both. But because my experience at Georgia Tech had been so traumatizing, that I had vowed that I would never return or step foot back on that campus. So I've lost contact with anyone who I made friends with at Georgia Tech, unfortunately. So, you know, when they send letters to my mom's house, like, hey, you want to make a donation? You can know where that can go. That can go straight to trash. My mother knows that's only one place I send my money to, and that's Spelman College. If you ain't Spelman College, you don't get a nickel. Even though I went to a master's and PhD school after that were perfectly fine. There's only one place to get my money, and that's Spelman College.
I hear it. So you went on to get a master's degree and a doctorate.
I did.
And what's your doctorate in?
It's in electrical engineering, with a focus on robotics and controls. Mm-hmm. So I teach electrical courses, robotics, and controls courses.
Love it. I just really want you to say that. Really wanted to have that as a part of the show.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, on Twitter, even though I'm on sabbatical, I ain't got to do a lick of teaching. I'm on here making robotics quizzes on Twitter every day because I just love seeing how people answer them.
And I promise you, I'm looking. I'm like, is it Dr. Barry Carlotta's own
sabbatical? I know, right? And I don't know if you noticed, because I'm crazy, but like I always make an answer choice something typically Black. Like today, one of the answer choices is Shanae. And yesterday, one of the answer choices, I think, was Epiphany and Arrow, because I saw a stripper in a movie called Epiphany. I don't even know if people notice that, but I just do crazy stuff like that to see if people paying attention.
I read them all, and there's a few that I've answered, and then there's a few like, you know, because my, I'll, full disclosure, is like my, there's a certain level of knowledge I have, and then it gets to that wall, and I'm like, yeah, I can't touch that one. I don't even, mm-mm.
Yes. And I swear I'd be trying to make them easy, but, you know, I don't know what easy is. You know, it's kind of like when you know something, I tell my students this, when you know something so well, after a while, it's hard for me to remember what it was like when I didn't know it. And right. It's hard for me to remember what it was like when it was easy. So I tell them, if I explain something to you and you're really not getting it, I'm not offended if you go ask your classmate or another professor and they're able to explain it better. Because sometimes it's hard for me to remember back to those days when I just didn't get it, you know?
Right. But I love that the idea is that you wanted to teach. So when you started teaching, was the hope, of course, and you said as much, you know, your hope is that you would basically reproduce yourself, but like in multiple forms and in, you know, what male, female, but that there were more Black people going into engineering or going into STEM, which is the complete motivation, a completely legitimate motivation that I happen to share. But so how do you think you've done so far?
I've done pretty good with women. I'll tell you a little bit. So I started out at HBCU, and I was at Tennessee State University, which is in Nashville, and I obviously taught engineering. And so I think I had an awesome impact while I was there. In fact, all of my students from the 3 years that I taught there, when I left, I kind of just quit abruptly, and I didn't really communicate. They found me on Facebook. They found me on Twitter. They found me on Instagram, and they still reach out to me. A lot of them are in industry now, but a couple of them are professors now. In fact, I recently found one of them on Twitter, and she wrote me on Twitter and said, "I just want you to know I model my teaching after you and what you did for me when I was in your student, when I was your student." So that made me smile. One of my other students is now teaching at Tennessee State. He teaches in the business program. He was an undergraduate when I was there. So, and I don't consider those my successes. I consider anybody who stayed in engineering a success story. But now that I'm at a PWI, I started a program with a colleague called Rosebud. I teach at Rose Holman in Terre Haute, Indiana. So it's called Rose Building Undergraduate Diversity, or Rosebud. And the program is a scholarship and professional development program to get more students interested in obtaining degrees in computer science and electrical and computer engineering. And the program has been around since 2009. So in about 10 years, we've graduated probably 30 or so students. So why I said now I seem to have more success with women, because of this, where the school's located and the demographics of it, we have a really hard time getting Black and Hispanic students. So since the program also has a mission of increasing women, we do better with women than diverse as Black or Hispanic students. But I'm not giving up. I'm not going to give up. I feel like anything I do that affects the numbers is a win. And electrical and computer engineering, as well as computer science and software engineering, are some of the least populated disciplines for women and minorities. And part of the reason is because it's the disciplines where people say it's hard for them to see how it helps society. We know all engineering and STEM helps society. But if you're a mechanical engineer, you can see wheels, you can see gears, you can see a car. But electricity, it's behind the wall. I had a colleague that says there's several different kinds of engineering. There's the behind the wall engineering, there's the visible engineering, and there's the wet, you know, like chemistry, chemical engineering, et cetera. Those kind are harder for young people to see. Me being a roboticist and robotics and the excitement of it because of FIRST programs and things like that, it recruits students to mechanical engineering. And I have to tell students electrical and computer science and software are also part of robotics. A robot with no brain is a brick. A robot,
that's true.
Right. A robot with no electronics, with no control system to make decisions, is pretty boring. So you have to get them to understand that just because you like robotics doesn't mean you necessarily should be a mechanical engineer. Tell me what excites you about the robot, and I can tell you what kind of engineer you should be. Do you like writing code? Do you like debugging circuits? Do you like gears and machines? And, tell me what you like, and I can tell you what kind of engineer you should be.
I love that. I don't think I've ever thought of it that way. What I do know is I'm a mechanical engineer myself, is that, I mean, there's nothing that we can do without an electrical engineer. So there's like, I've designed everything from train car parts to like systems that go into buildings. And there's always an electrical component. That's an important part of what we do.
Absolutely.
So we are interdependent.
Absolutely. I talk about power. My first job out of undergrad, I didn't go directly from my graduate degree. I had to go work because I had massive student loan debt because I had run out of money about a year before graduation. I'll have to tell you that drama story sometime. So I was working three jobs at one point. That's one reason why my GPA was so crappy, because I was working in the dining hall. I was working at the spaghetti factory. I was still tutoring students in math back at Spelman. So I went to go work at Ford Motor Company, and probably within a week of me being there, they said, "We're going to have to send you to a training program because you don't know enough mechanics." I was an electrical engineer. So I tell my students, there is no silo of degrees anymore. You need to always have a multidisciplinary perspective of your degree, because the first thing I had to do as an electrical engineer was go to mechanical engineering boot camp to do my job when I got to Ford Motor Company. Because although I was a process controls engineer and I worked in a manufacturing facility, so I did the robotics and the controls and all of that, I didn't know enough about talking to the mechanical engineers to design and debug and maintenance the equipment. So I tell my students, don't ever stop learning, number one, and don't ever think that because you chose this discipline, you don't need to know anything about anything else. My colleagues and I created a multidisciplinary minor in robotics at my school for that very reason. And so to get a robotics minor, you have to take classes in computer science, electrical engineering, and mechanical engineering.
Love it. Love it. And it's so needed. It's a change in mindset.
Absolutely.
But I think it's needed because you're absolutely right. It's so, so the thing is that here's what I know being, sitting in the seat I've been sitting in and doing the work that I've been doing and have done in the past is that, engineers don't work alone. It's always a team.
Absolutely.
And as such, we know, if we don't know, we've had the opportunity or we have the opportunity to learn from others. So I wasn't an electrical engineer. I wasn't an architect. I wasn't a civil engineer. But, after a while, I could look and see, okay, well, this is outside the building. So this would be the civil engineer's responsibility. But I can tell you the size of that pipe is not what it's supposed
right,
to be.
Right, right. I know that much, right.
Right. Because you've had these conversations, you've been in the meetings, you come to understand the mindset of the thought or the thought process of the different disciplines that are in the room so that you can be able to work together and know a little piece without it being, I'm trying to step on your toes kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love it. I love that. So what are you doing now? Yeah, I know you're on sabbatical, but what else have a lot going on.
There's just so much going on. Okay, let's start. First of all, I want to thank God that a year ago in 2019, because at my school, you have to apply for sabbatical a year before you decide to go. So I just have to say, I am so grateful that back in 2019, before the pandemic, before the summer of racial injustice, I chose to apply for sabbatical because I just don't know what I would be doing right now if I had to get up and go to work every day. And I know a lot of people do and have, and they do it with grace, but I'm just grateful it's not me. So for my sabbatical, what I applied to do is to go and actually to refresh some of my technical knowledge. So I worked as a controls engineer from 1994 until 1997 before I went to graduate school. And then I've taught ever since. So one thing that's big with students is you don't know anything about the real world. Those who don't do teach, why is this relevant? Where am I ever going to see this theory? So the thing I propose I wanted to do with my sabbatical is I wanted to go back to just being an everyday, regular, shregler engineer. So I work for a company that does automation controls, and we actually do PLC, line logic, and human machine interface design for a company so that they can install new processes to manufacture things. So I'm learning more about where the process controls industry has and where it has evolved into since I left back in 97. And then I'm going to take this knowledge and integrate it into my controls classes and robotics courses when I return. So I'll also be working for the robotics engineering part of this company as well to learn more about what they do. So it's basically to take some of the theory that I already have and see how it's currently being applied in the real world so that I can sell my students on why they want to learn what I'm teaching.
Oh, I love it.
So my original sabbatical. That was all I was supposed to be doing with sabbatical. And then the George Floyd killing happened. And it totally upended the apple cart for a lot of people, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So I'm a member of the Academic Research and Leadership Network, ARLN. And it's a bunch of PhDs in engineering. And it's basically the organization has been around since 2015. And the main thing we do is you just support each other, celebrate each other's accomplishments. You know, when people get tenure, people get grants and things like that. And after the George Floyd killing and after Black and the Ivory started trending on Twitter, we had on the listserv, people were like, it feels like we should be doing more. We've always supported each other. We've always celebrated each other. But it kind of feels like as engineers, as Black engineering PhDs, it's kind of time for us to break outside of our box and show how what we can do can impact the world as a community, as opposed to as individuals. Because I think people always have done things as individuals. So we started the Black in Engineering Social Justice Movement as a branch of Academic Research and Leadership Network. We started the Twitter account, me and two of my colleagues. We have monthly call to action meetings. We have the Black Engineering Faculty Speak Initiative, which is the media component, which is actually where I do most of my work. I do the Twitter, and I'm the one who gets all the videos organized. And I'm the one who wrangle the cats together to make the videos. and we're using the media component in order to amplify Black voices in engineering and show that we are more than Dilbert and Sheldon and MacGyver, and that we are diverse, we're intersectional, we're women, we're men, we're Black, we're mommies, we're daddies. One thing I like to do with the Black in Engineering account is if there's something big happening on Black Twitter, I jump in. So, you know, during the verses with Patty and, brain fart.
Gladys Knight.
Black in Engineering was in there tweeting with everybody else. You know, the Breonna Taylor decision today, Black in Engineering may tweet about that as well, because I want to show that, because right now the stigma that Black engineering PhDs have is they only care about their lab, their research, their grad students getting tenure and getting promoted and their grants. And we've got to show that we're about more than that. I care. I'm a whole person. I'm a whole being.
Right.
And so one of the challenges we're having right now is getting more of them on social media. So many bad things happen on social media that a lot of them are pretty gun shy about doing it. You know,
interesting.
They're afraid of, you know, you're being targeted, because, you know, you're normally one of one or two on your campus.
Right.
So you're already kind of, you know, looked at as hyper visible as it is. And you don't want that to continue. I'm the only Black woman faculty member on my campus. There's only about 200 faculty. There's about 5 Black men and there's me. So, of course everybody knows me. If I do something good, bad, or ugly, everybody knows. If I am at a meeting or not at a meeting, everybody knows, but I want to be transparent. So my school follows me on Twitter. I want them to know what I'm saying and what I'm doing and what's important to me. So now my sabbatical has not only become not about my company that I work for, but we now have Black in Engineering, Black in Computing, and Black in Robotics. So I help with all three of those. And all of those kind of have a similar mission to amplify Black people in those areas, to make it more universal and common so that undergraduates can see mentors and role models. And they can also go see research labs they can go to. Can I be your grad student? I've had people reach out to me on Twitter. Can you give me advice about a graduate program in robotics? And I now can tell you, here are 5 professors looking for people for their research lab, because we're all in one place on Twitter now.
I love it. And I think it's really smart. It's using what's available to us right now.
Absolutely.
And where people are. So,
right.
I think it's, when I saw it, I was like, I got to be a part of this.
Absolutely.
And
I want to also mention one of the biggest things we've done is the call to action on our Black in Engineering website, which was crowdsourced by the members of ARLN. So people just went in a Google Doc, added their ideas, and then Cullen Bowie and Audrey Belden and a couple other people prettied it up. That and our video, Black Engineering Faculty Speak, We Rise, has actually consolidated into other articles. We have schools that have reached out to us and who are integrating some of that into DIE things on their campus now. So it has become so much bigger than what we visualized. This was a grassroots movement that grew faster and took off faster than we could keep up with it. Like, we're now trying to get 501c3 status so people can give us money. People are trying to give us money and we didn't even have a bank account. So,
right.
So I think people were so hungry for what we had and we just didn't know it, that we probably should have done it a whole lot sooner.
But maybe you guys can just settle on the idea that you did it when you needed to do it and you are where you need to be right now. Because, I mean, we can all think about, you know, the five things that we didn't do, but look at the millions of people that you touched or that sort of, you know, glanced at the page or that read a comment. So, you know, like, yeah, okay, we'll get it right. We'll do the behind the scenes stuff, but don't diminish the importance of it.
Absolutely.
Because I can tell you, having been on Twitter a long time, that I've seen nothing like this before. Seen nothing like it.
And I would tell you, for me being on Twitter a long time, as I've been on Twitter for years and ain't done nothing with it. And I have done, I've done more with Twitter that was of meaning to me since March of 2020 than I have. I've probably been on Twitter since 2014. So I spent 6 years on Twitter doing absolutely nothing that meant nothing about nothing as far as I'm concerned, other than every now and then I posted when I got an award or I was given a talk somewhere. So you're exactly right. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, okay. So now tell my, I always forget this. So here's the last question. Tell people tell yourself, if you could go back and maybe, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, if you could go back through time and you could talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her and why?
Okay. So I was raised by a single mom. My mom was always my biggest cheerleader. I'm her only daughter, obviously, and I look just like her. And so she brags on me all day. I'm smart. I can do no wrong. I would tell my younger self to really hold on to the people who believe in you. Because when things are going well, it's really easy to do that. But when you start to struggle, that imposter syndrome kicks in. And it's really hard to shake it. I went through a phase of that at Georgia Tech really badly. And when I got to graduate school, I remember being in high school and my vice principal was a Black woman. And I would sit in the hallway. It was a magnet school, so we were kind of weird. So I was sitting in the hallway reading all the time. And when I graduated, she said to me, she said, I need you to start walking and holding your head up. Because when I walk, I look down or I look at my feet. And so that's what I would tell my younger self is you're here, you're powerful, and you can do what you think you can. Stop doubting yourself.
Wow. Yeah, I think we need more of that. The continuous reinforcement is so needed. Yeah. Sometimes we don't have it to give to ourselves. So, but learning how to really take that information from the people who are genuine, who are for us, who are in our corner.
Absolutely. Positive affirmations is a big one. This is something I've been posting on Twitter as well. When it was getting close to time for me to graduate, it took me 6 years to get my PhD. That was 6 years beyond my master's. So that was a long time. I went through one set of ideas, another set of ideas. I got a new advisor and then it changed it as well. So by the time I graduated, I had printed out scriptures and affirmations, and I put them all over my cubicle. And that's the only thing that kept me going is when I would go in the lab, I would sit down and that surrounded me. You know, the fruits of the spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kind. And I just had to keep looking at that. And I think that's really something else I would tell my younger self. Get you some affirmations, put it on some stick-its and stick it on the mirror. Just like being Mary Jane in the TV show, stick your stuff up there and read and reinforce.
Yeah, I love it.
Visualize it. Yeah,
absolutely love it. Okay, so tell the listeners where to find you.
Oh, please come follow me on Twitter. I need some followers. So my name on Twitter is DrCaBerry, Dr. C.A. Berry. It is the same on Instagram, although I haven't really mastered Instagram that much. So I'm not on there all that much because, you know, that's not my gift. And if you Google me, because my name is so unique, it's my grandmother's name. Everything that comes up is pretty much me at the very top, because you know how they say you should periodically Google your name and see what's out there. Mm-hmm. So if you Google my name, Dr. Carlotta Berry, my school website comes up pretty quickly. Articles and papers I've written come up as well. So that's also another way to quickly learn things about me.
Awesome. So you guys got it. It'll also be in the show notes when the show hits. So in case you didn't get the opportunity to write it down, all of these, you can find all of her handles. You'll be able to find them in the show notes. All right. So you guys, let us thank Dr. Carlotta Berry for being on the show today. Like I said, I'm always excited when I have another Black woman on the show with me. But I just really want to say thank you for saying yes when I, you know, randomly reached out to you. I can't even tell you how much I appreciate it and how much I've enjoyed our conversation today.
And thank you for thinking of me. This has been a real honor. You know, I love to share my story, and I especially like to share it with you because we're Twitter friends.
We are Twitter friends. I can't. It's like every morning I wake up, let me see what Carlotta's talking about today.
only because I'm on sabbatical. And this is what I tell everybody. So when I go back in the black hole, y'all gonna be like, oh, she must be back at work now.
Exactly. I have to come and find you later.
Right. In fact, the one reason why I started that whole Nora Steminis thing is because sometimes I'm like, oh, there's a tweet I need to find that I wrote I want to refer to. I started that hashtag because it made me easy to go find my stuff.
I promise you, it is fire. I love it.
Let me tell you where that came from. I was like, I am a Steminist. I absolutely am. But I really am on fire for Black women. And I don't know French, but I knew that stem noir, I know I'm saying the word wrong, was a thing. And I was like, well, steminist noir doesn't sound right. I'm just going to put it in the beginning. I don't know if it's bad French or not. I don't know if it means I'm a Black woman steminist or I'm a steminist for Black people. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
Listen, I love it too. So I'm with it. I try to put it, my hashtag is the nerdy STEM queen.
Which so I love like, just as much.
Thank you. So I got your back and I watch, I learn, and I listen. So you got a friend for life in me.
Thank you. And now that I know you went to Georgia Tech, absolutely. Where did you end up going afterwards, by the way?
So I went to Southern Polytechnic State University, just up the street, Marietta. It was a much smaller school, still getting an engineering degree from there. So that's where I went.
And you're still in Atlanta. You've been in Atlanta the whole time.
I have been in Atlanta the whole time.
Wow. So. Yeah. When I come back to visit, I don't recognize Atlanta now. I graduated the year that the decision was made for the Olympics to be held in Atlanta. So then when I go back for my reunions, it's obviously post-Olympics, I'm like, I don't know this city. It was a little country town when I was a student at Spelman. And by the time I graduated from Georgia Tech, it was still a little country town. They had just started construction when I graduated from Georgia Tech. So now when I go back, I'm like, I don't recognize where Spelman is. I don't recognize where Georgia Tech is. I don't recognize none of it.
Yeah, it's built up and they are still building.
And the traffic. You know, there was no traffic when I was there either. You know, me and my girlfriends used to hop in the car and run up to Lenox Mall like nothing. And I was sitting there in traffic like, this is L.A. When did Atlanta become L.A.?
I promise you. Yeah. It's a whole thing. I promise you.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. So thanks again for tuning in for this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. And until next time, you guys, keep yourselves safe.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. Please check out the show notes to get additional information about today's guest or today's topic. You can find the podcast on every major podcast platform. You can find additional information about Dr. Tasha at www.drtasha.com. Thanks again, and don't forget to tune in every Tuesday for the latest episode of Stemming in Stilettos.